10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Good evening, and welcome to another evening of Dr. Cliff Burton Friends, featuring the absolute very best in all of women's sports. Good evening. Welcome to another evening of Dr. Cliff Burton Friends, featuring the absolute very best in all of women's sports and HBCU athletics. We want to welcome our co-host tonight. Before we do, we want to say happy Women's Month, happy spring break, and welcome to everybody. March Madness is here. Jeff, I'm going to say hello. Say hello, everybody.
How's it going, everybody?
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, hello. How you doing?
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here with us.
All right. Great. And Jim, tell everybody. Hello.
Good evening. What up, though? Detroit. Glad to be here.
All righty. Sounds good. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about a problem that's been happening in the subways of New York, Chicago, and all of our big cities. It's with transportation. So, Jeff, let's talk a little bit about this story, and we have another one after it. New York security. Jeff.
Yes, once again, good evening, folks. This is a big problem. A few weeks ago, New York governor decided to place extra law enforcement within the New York City subway system. There's been an uprise in crime. I believe towards the beginning of this year, there was a 45% increase in crime. That's significant. That's almost 50%. That's real big. Just to give you an idea, pre-pandemic, there was about an average of 5 million riders per day on the New York City subway system. That's a good number of folks. After the pandemic, it averaged about 3 million. So there was an estimate of a 2 million person drop off, which is also significant, but 3 million riders per day is a lot. There's a lot, just to give you a little taste of New York City subway system. I rode that system for about 24 years straight. There's a lot going on in the New York City subways. Not only do you have the daily riders, you have a large number of homeless within that system 24 hours, both day and night. Sometimes they're sleeping in the train yards. You can find them on the train. Law enforcement has been pretty good over the years, but you cannot cover everything. Law enforcement cannot cover everything. So apparently, with the uptick in crime, we're talking about a large number of persons being robbed, attacked. This year and last year, there have been a number of persons being pushed on the tracks. That's been a huge issue. There's also been an issue of conductors, unfortunately, getting attacked. I think this year there were two in particular. A conductor was neck was slashed, and I believe another one was beat up. This is an ongoing thing, and so it's been really tough. So the governor added extra law enforcement, state troopers, extra police, and about 750, and I mean this is real big, 750 military personnel. This is huge. This is something that has never happened before within that system. And so it's a new presence. What they're doing is they're doing baggage checks, random baggage checks, because there's no way you could do 100% access for bags in the New York City system. It is virtually impossible. You have to have an extremely amount of personnel, and they just don't have that. But random baggage checks, let's say every four persons, you know, they might check somebody's bag. It's a presence. They've been finding weapons and so forth. But a lot of people are complaining that that's a temporary thing, number one. Number two, it does not keep people, those who are doing the particular crimes within the system, out. There's always the mental issue. That's a mental health issue is big. Another thing is, they're noticing that a lot of crimes that are being committed, folks don't even have bags. Those persons don't have bags. So if you're only checking bags and you're not doing 100%, what about those persons who are coming in that, again, have mental health issues too? They're not even carrying bags.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing. And I don't know what's going to happen. Once again, they're going to have to remove this at some point, because you cannot sustain this effort of putting law enforcement there. Definitely the military personnel cannot be there 100% of the time. So we'll have to see what happens, but it's a very dangerous thing. I will say, as a previous rider, you have to be more diligent when you enter into the subway. There are so many people in the subway at particular times that the tracks are crowded. All those riders that know what I'm talking about, on the rush hour times in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, on the way back home, there are some platforms you can go through that are completely full.
Mm-hmm.
Completely. Also in the train, you can be in a train, and we talk about back in the day, you are packed in like sardines in a can. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anything could happen at any time. Please be advised that it's in your best interest not to stand close to the track. Move back as far as possible. Sometimes it's very crowded and it's hard to, you know, it's hard to stand towards the back, but you need to make every effort. Keep an eye on those around you, and, you know, as best as possible, try not to ride alone. I mean, most of our riders have to go daily. So that's what's going on right now. It's a tough, tough situation, and I'm praying for, you know, my native New Yorkers, Cliff.
Yeah, yeah. Jeff, we want to stay on top of the story. Thanks for bringing it to us. And I'm going to open up the mic on this next story today. In the state of Mississippi, in Rankin, Mississippi, not far outside of Jackson, Mississippi, one of six white policemen were convicted in the torturing of two black men. This happened last year, January of 2023. The policemen broke into two men's home, made them strip, poured honey, milk on them, tortured them, and even shot one in the mouth. And today, Hunter Edward Elwood, one of the six police officers, the first one, was handed down a sentence of 20 years. Ironically, this happened the same month that the five black policemen also killed Mr. Nichols down in Memphis last year. These policemen named themselves the Goon Squad, and they have also been linked to possible two deaths of other men and an injury prior to this one. So far in this case, finally, it looks like some justice is being served. Jeff, just give us your brief thoughts on that situation as you hear it or understand it so far.
Yeah, I'm still trying to gather more information on this. I'm very interested to see how this plays out. The first thing is, I'm always surprised when an officer is convicted. That's just been the history of this thing, that the first thing happens is that a lot of time will pass before anything is done. The initial MO is they put them on, you know, administrative leave, and then they let a lot of time pass by. The story dies down. The interest is not as great as when it initially happens, and only the far and few stay on top of it, and those lawyers that are involved. So I'm very interested in where this leads. One good thing is, once you have one conviction, there's a very strong possibility that another will follow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is a good thing. I believe that in this case, all officers involved need to be reprimanded and handed some kind of penalty. No question about it.
The six police officers in the Mississippi case all have pleaded guilty for multiple charges.
You need to say that again.
The six police officers, the white officers in the Mississippi case, have all pleaded guilty to all charges in that case. Now, in the Memphis case, only one police officer has pleaded guilty and the rest we still have to see how it turns out. So that's where we are so far. We're going to keep an eye on everything. And let me just go. I want to get Dr. Kemp's thought on the case in Mississippi. Dr. Kemp?
Thanks, Dr. Bird, for bringing this to our attention and sharing this information, you know, with us. I'm so glad that at least we know about this, because I didn't even hear about the initial case, you know, a year ago, or maybe they discussed it. It just it wasn't a story that I actually remember. But I'm so glad that a federal judge was the one that actually at least handed down a 20-year sentence for, you know, one of the officers. And as Jeff said, hopefully there will be others that's going to be convicted, you know, during this story. It's just, here we go, you know, it's sad that we're still dealing with this, but, you know, we know that this is going to continue to happen.
All six officers have pleaded guilty to all charges already. It's just about a sentencing.
That's interesting.
Yep, they got enough evidence and they pleaded guilty. We'll follow up. We can stay on top of the story. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Dr. Kemp. And we're going to move on to something a little more positive down in Mississippi. This lady, Osceola McCarthy, I want everybody, Osceola McCarthy, M-C-C-A-R-T-Y, born March 7th, 1908, and she passed September 26, 1996. She was a local washerwoman in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And she took this up as a craft that she learned from her mother. In her lifetime, she was determined, even though she had a sixth grade education, she was determined to help those who came after her. On her washerwoman salary, she saved $150,000 and started an endowment at the University of Mississippi so that students of color, when she's dead and gone, could get the education that she was never able to get. She's going on to receive the Presidential Citizens Medal and so many other awards. But Osceola McCarthy is nothing but a hero. And we don't talk about her much, an undereducated woman who did big things for a lot of us. And Jim, give me your thoughts. Osceola McCarthy.
Well, Cliff, listening to the story about her and reading some more on her, you know, a person who, like you said, started out on giving $150 a month, and the estimated amount from her scholarship is estimated $150,000.
Yeah.
And for her to do these things, not educated herself, but just to try to advance others, is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Joelle, give us your thoughts. Osceola McCarthy, a hero.
Yes, Osceola McCarthy, she is the prime example of passing it forward. She gave the gift to say, I'm going to wash clothes. Some people, she might not have wanted to wash clothes or things. Whatever that she was being paid just to wash each item, she put in the determination and whatever to save that. And then on top of that, she kept saving and piled up. Week after week, month after month, year after year, until she finally saved up enough that she had $150,000 to give away to people for a better education. So I think we all could learn about the gift of giving. And congratulations to her as the honorarium. We use this as a gift as we set up these programs.
Yep. There's an endowment at the University of Mississippi. Osceola McCarthy. Oh, yeah. Now, as you look at history, and we all know in 2020, the pandemic just happened. But there's another woman we don't talk about. Her name, Dr. Kizbikia Corbett. Okay? She was born on January 26, 1986. Dr. Corbett, who now resides at Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, at the time was working on her postdoc at the Department of NIH. Simply said, Dr. Corbett, this young African-American female, was one of the leading scientists in developing the Moderna vaccine. A lot of people don't know that. Dr. Fauci refers to her as front, leading edge, and one of the key members in bringing this to the forefront. And when she saw that it worked, she said she couldn't believe her eyes. So she is also nothing but a hero. Hero. Dr. Kismikia Corbett, and we do not talk about her enough. Dr. Corbett. Dr. Corbett. Sorry about that. Dr. Corbett. Joelle?
Yes, Dr. Kamikia Corbett. She's very instrumental into the vaccine that during the COVID time for Moderna. Also, I like to talk about her works of publication. She began in 2014. She did a on characterizations of human antibody responses. And she did that first way back in 2014. And then in 2015, she started pre-existing neutralizing antibody responses, distinguishing clinic, interparent, and antifungal viruses. That was way before COVID came. As far as breathing antifungal. And then all of a sudden in 2016, she was still publishing. And she kept publishing all the way through until she was finally put on the board along with Dr. Yes, of the United States.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Jim, let's talk about Dr. Kismikia Corbett. Thank you, Joel.
It looks like she's devoted her career to immunology, and she's worked in Sri Lanka. She's worked all over the world trying to develop immunizations. And, you know, she helped out and was crucial in developing the COVID vaccine, which is still helping us now fight off this dreaded disease.
Mm-hmm. And people don't talk about it. When it first came out, a lot of people of color, because of historically things in medicine, were scared to take it. They think of Tuskegee experiments and others. But Dr. Kismikia Corbett, she was on the front line for us. Dr. Kemp, give us your thoughts. Dr. Kismikia Corbett.
So proud of Dr. Corbett. It's just wonderful just to see her at the forefront, one of the leading scientists for just discovering or help to discover the COVID 19 virus, as well as just being in the forefront of the solutions or the vaccines to help us actually get through the pandemic. A young sister just doing her thing, and what can you say? She was highlighted in the Time 100 Next list under the category of innovators. So I'm just so proud and happy that she will always be a part of history. Whether they mention her name or not, she will always be there.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, thank you, Dr. Kemp. Dr. Kismikia Corbett. Jeff?
Sure, it makes me wonder, what if she was the face at the particular time as opposed to Fauci? What effect would that have had on, people of color and their decisions to take,
Yeah.
It makes me wonder, why keep her silent?
Yeah.
Why keep her silent? That's amazing. It's another reason why, they seem to, in our schools today, want to shun the African-American experience and keep it silent as opposed to putting it on the forefront. So, yeah. You have to scratch your head, man. Give her all the praise in the world for it.
Absolutely. She just, along with Man Affairs, helped save the world. Okay, you are welcome, our five engaged listeners. Now, let's go forward and let's talk about the woman they call Mamba, all right? None other than this Diana Taurasi. We talked about her early life, but let's talk about her international career and several things. We have one more week with her. In the Olympics, she won gold, 2004 in Athens, 2008, gold in Beijing, 2012, gold in London, 2016, gold in Rio de Janeiro, and 2020, gold in Tokyo. And then in the World Championship Games, 2010, Czech Republic gold, 2014, Turkey gold, 2018, gold in Spain, and 2006, in Brazil, she won a bronze medal. They called her Kobe Bryant labeled her the white mamba. Let's talk about her. Tim, Diana Taurasi.
Diana Taurasi is one of only two players ever to win five gold medals. And I don't put it past her to win a sixth in 2024 in Paris.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she's had a great career in the U.S. She's also had a great career in the EuroLeague, where she also has won some championships. So this is, I think, undisputed GOAT of women's basketball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Jeff, your tip on Diana Taurasi. Thank you, Jim.
Yes, that's a bad young lady, Cliff.
Yeah.
You know, you can't question anything about her accomplishments ever. She is cemented in what she has done. And I never hear anything bad about her. That's the one thing that really gets me. You never hear anything negative about her. So she has the whole package, man. I got to give her all kudos in the world. And I got to agree with, I have to agree with Jim. Goat, goat, goat. Goat, goat, goat.
Yeah. Kobe Bryant again, the black mamba, the white mamba. Joelle, Diana Taurasi, what do you have for us? One more week with
us. Yes, Diana Taurasi, outstanding point guard, shooting guard. One of the best to come out the WNBA, and she is the white mamba, as stated. She has played, not only does she have the WNBA careers, well, started with college, then WNBA, the overseas, the national team. All I can say is that she just keep going and we keep watching her. All those that come in underneath her have something to look forward to. All these that are playing in championships now. Look at Diana Taurasi. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Joelle. All right. It's March Madness time. We're going to give you the best outlook we can. We've got a lot of March Madness for you tonight. Let's start with the NIAA, and then let's work our way up to the NCAA Divisions 3, 2, and 1. Now, the NIAA are down to the quarterfinals, so they're playing to go to the quarterfinals. All four number one seeds are still available. Let's talk about the women. In the Naismith quadrant, which would be the West, Upper West, you have Marion, number one seed, still left. In the lower quadrant, Indiana Wesleyan, in the Kramer quadrant, they're still left. The number one seed, Campbellsville, Kentucky. In the Dura quadrant, that's the East Upper quadrant, they're still left. And lower, out of Iowa, they're also number one seed, and they're still left. They are starting on March 22nd, their round of 16, March 23rd, the quarterfinal rounds, March 25th, semifinals, and the championship, March 26th. So that's coming to an end in the women's NAIA tournament. They're down to the field of 16. Now, let's go to the men. In the men, Naismith quadrant, West Upper, you have number one seed, Greystown, Indiana. In the lower quadrant on the West, you have Freed Hardin out of Tennessee, a number one seed, still left. And then let's go to the Dura quadrant, the only HBCU men or women's team left in NAIA, Leipzig. Out of Oklahoma, number one seed, still left. And then the lower quadrant, the College of Idaho. They were the number one seed in the listed quadrant. That's the lower east. They're still left. 16 teams, they're going at it. Same schedule. Championship will end up March 26th. We're going to wish all those teams in the NAIA well. Now, we want to go to Division III, the NCAA. They complete their championships this past Saturday. We want to congratulate the women of NYU. They are the national champions, and they did it in an undefeated style. So we want to give them a hand. Yeah. They knocked off Transylvania, the defending champions, along the way. In the men's division, first-time champion, Trine, that's T-R-I-N-E, Trine College, they knocked off Trinity out of Connecticut in the semifinals on Saturday. They won against Hampton Sydney. They are the national champions in Division III. So March Madness is well underway, as you can tell. Oh, yeah. Give me your thoughts, Dr. Kemp, on just the knowledge of the March Madness going on in the IA, Division III, 2 and 1, because most of us just concentrate on Division One. Dr. Kemp?
That is so true, Dr. Burr, because even before we like really started the, you know, the podcast and just really researching, all I really knew myself was March Madness. You see the Division One schools and you tend to really forget. Of course, we all know that they have all these colleges, you know, that are out here. But if you're not a big sports fan or, you know, enjoy sports like we all do, you forget that there's other divisions, you know, that also play the March Madness, such as Divisions II, like you just mentioned, Division III, NAIA, and other, you know, divisions for the college sports, and not just basketball. You know, we have volleyball, which we covered. You have softball that's coming. Of course, you know, the track and field. So I think it's definitely a help, and we definitely appreciate you taking the time going over this information for us to break it down so we can get excited, not only for Division One, but the other divisions and congratulate, you know, the teams and for the student athletes to know if you don't make it into a Division One school, there's always other schools that are out here where you can get an academic scholarship as in, and continue to play any sports that you want to as well and come out with a degree as well as enjoying playing sports, which you also enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I'm going to give a brief update on Division II. We want to mention they're down also to the Sweet 16 in the women's division. The women of Fayetteville State, they got an at-large bid from the CIAA, are in the field of, 32. They're down to the field of 32. And they're wrapping up their tournament by the end of next week. We'll update you next week. In the men's division, they're also in the field of 32. You can pull those brackets off. NCAA, home, men or women's Division II basketball. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll come right back, and we'll continue on. All right, welcome back. Dr. Cliff Burton Friends featuring the absolute very best in all women's sports and HBCU athletics. We're going to start some of our spring sports, and then we'll get back to men and women's Division One March Madness. In the SIAC, our Division II that has women's softball, we're going to talk about that tonight, as well as the CIAA. So, Dr. Kemp, take us through the SIAC women's softball.
Sure, Dr. Burt. So just for the SIAC 2024 softball standings for the women in the schools in the East, we have Fort Valley State. Conference record is 7 wins, 3 losses. Albany State, 9 wins, 5 losses. Edward Waters, a record of 6-4. Savannah State, a record of 5-6. Benedict College, record of 4 wins, 7 losses. Allen College, record of is 3-10. Clark Atlanta is a record of 2-10 at this time. For the West Division of the SIAC, Spring Hill is leading the pack with 10-0, a record of 10 wins and 0 losses. Lane College is 8-2. Kentucky State, 7 wins, 3 losses. Tuskegee has 6 wins and 3 losses so far. Miles College with 2 wins, 8 losses. And Lemoyne On is one win, and nine losses. That's the standings as of now for the 2024 SIAC softball records as of today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kim. As we can tell, our spring sports softball is the winner for this season. And Joelle, I'm going to come to you, and I want you to give us the softball update for women in the CIAA.
Yes, and for the CIAA on 2024 softball statistics, I have Bluefield State first, and I am looking at their runs. I have a .34 averaging Claflin with a .32, Virginia State coming next with a .11, then Shaw in fourth, Elizabeth City State, and then fifth, Boys State, seventh, Fayetteville State, eighth, Lincoln, Pennsylvania, ninth, Johnson C. Smith, and 10th, Winston-Salem State, and last in 11th is Livingston. And so that's currently what I have. There's a lot of softball to be played, and I'd like to update and play the stats as we do on the next show for softball. So congratulations to all those in the softball sessions of this spring.
All right. The CIAA acting good. Now, we're going to turn to men's baseball, and we have in the GCAC, all right? And number one, I'm just going to give conference records. Wiley, Texas, 6-0. Talladega, 4-1. Rusk, 4-2. Dillard, 2-3. Tougaloo, 2-4. Commander Smith, 1-4. Southern University of New Orleans, 0-2. Oakwood, 0-3. Those are the only teams that have baseball teams in the Gulf Coast Athletic Conference. For Women's Softball Division One, we're going to review that next week. You know, Oklahoma, 71, gave Women's Street the national champions, was broken a few weeks ago. But we're going to talk about the women's top 10 in approximately 1 week. Now, Jill, I want you to update us on the free agency. There's still some NFL work going on. Jill, we're going to turn over to you, okay?
All right. Jill? In the NFL, we have a big trade came about. Well, now, first of all, it wasn't a trade. It was Russell Wilson signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right. And since Denver owed him $39 million, the Steelers only had to pay him the veteran minimum of $1.2 million. Give them a hand on that.
Yeah.
And Denver is responsible for the other $37.8 million.
Wow.
But then in a stunning move to me, they turned around and also picked up Justin Fields for a conditional sixth round pick, which means that, well, if he plays over 51% of the snaps, it'll be a fourth round pick, but I expect him to play about 48-47%, mm-hmm. which means they got their quarterback of 2024 in Russell Wilson and 2025 and beyond in Justin Fields. Now, in between that, the Kenny Pickett, the 2022 first-round draft pick, got upset that he was going to have to compete with Russell Wilson. So they traded him to Philadelphia.
All right, hold on, Jeff. Let's get some opinions here. Jeff, what are your thoughts about this? That's the frequent trades and money. And it's a business, isn't it? Jeff, your thoughts when we come back to Jim.
Man, I'm all messed up on this thing here. So it looks like Russell's going to play for like 2 years maybe. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I'm confused on this thing, man, what they're doing here. I'm really confused on this. So I'm praying for the brother, man. I don't know what to tell you, Cliff.
Jim, what's your answer on that there?
I think they want Russell to mentor Justin Fields for this year. You know, teach him everything he knows. And I don't know how Russ feels with that, but he must be okay with it because they didn't trade him for a bag of chips. So, you know, I kind of like the move. I kind of hate it for Russell, but I understand. Well, and everywhere he went, he was not going to be a starter.
Yeah.
And even in Pittsburgh, there was no guarantee. It was just they said you could compete. Yeah. So, and then
are you saying that he's after this first little 1 or maybe 2 year stint and him helping out this young fella that he's done, he's not going to be able to go anywhere else?
Or no, well, he's trying to rehabilitate himself too, Jeff. You know, he did not end well in Seattle. The first year in Denver was a wash. I think that he did fairly well last year, 26 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. But he fell afoul with Sean Payton.
Correct.
And Sean Payton wanted to get rid of him. Now, I just wanted to say some more about Kenny Pickett, because it's rumored that they wanted him to dress as a third quarterback after he got hurt. And he said he's not riding the bench last year and didn't dress. So I think when they told him this year he's got to compete, and he acted up again and said, nah, you gone. We ain't got time for this.
All right, Jim. All right.
Now, there have been a lot of teams that have been doing well in free agency. But Dallas is still notoriously silent and losing a lot of their players. But they did make a move this week in lowering Russell Wilson's cap hit. Not Russell Wilson. I'm sorry. Dak Prescott's cap hit from $59 million to $55 million by converting a signing bonus. Mm. But, you know, that albatross is what's holding Dallas from signing any other player. Now, Russell is a team – not I keep on saying Russell. Dak is a team player. But I think that Dak, with some of the criticism he's gotten from other Dallas Cowboy family members, he might be looking to, okay, I'm going to get my $59 million. And, you know, you deal with it.
Jim,
so that's something.
Let's bring Steve in there. Steve, what's your thoughts on Dak Prescott, Dallas Cowboys? We're coming to Joel next on the same subject. Steve?
Wait a minute, what did you say about Dak? I missed it.
Yeah, Dak is taking a cut in salary, Jim said. I just want to know, what are your thoughts about Dak? He's becoming a team player. Jim was saying, go ahead, Jim, I'll let you say it again.
Well, if he wants to be on a team that's going to do better, he did the right thing. It'll help them to be able to add some players. This year, Patrick Mahomes did the same thing about a week ago with $21 million. And what they did was they gave him a lot of money in a signing bonus. I guess that's one of the ways you work around it. But I think Dallas is still going to be in the same boat that they were this year. Maybe not even as good. Everybody else is getting better also. And as far as Russell Wilson, and I think they probably blindsided Russ, but it was a good move. But in regards to Kenny Pickett, I'm like, hey, your quarterback wears gloves. That's what I said last year when it was in Pittsburgh. Your quarterback wears gloves, okay? He's got little bitty hands. So they did the right thing.
Okay. I want to get to Wells' comment. I know she's still worried about the running back being lost out of Tennessee. But what's your thoughts on Dak Prescott, Joel, overall quarterback, and then making sacrifices to make the team better in Dallas? Joel?
Yes. Well, right now, what we're going through is free agents, trade offs, playoffs, and everything. So the money makes the difference. Some players will want to stay and retire with the team they've been with, but they'll have a better chance going somewhere else and make more money. But at the same time, the team, if you want to stay there and they want to keep you, but they're paying you a lot, may make a pay cut to keep you, to bring somebody else in. And then, like Steve said, endorse you in other ways. So for right now, I'm just really holding my breath, waiting a couple of more months to see who actually ends up on the teams. The thing for Russell Wilson, and he went to Pitt. I'm excited about that. I wish he had came to the Titans, and then we could have had Sierra.
Jim, let's keep going. All right, thanks for that.
What, like Joel said, what happens is a lot of teams go out and sign these big free agents, but then they have to let go some of their lesser name free agents, and it hurts them. You know, a lot of these players are like Patrick Queen. great linebacker for Baltimore Ravens. They signed somebody, and then they had to let him go, and he signed with the rival Pittsburgh Steelers. You see a lot of that, a lot of teams, and I understand when you have waivers, the teams in your division have first crack at you. So you see that a lot of times when somebody is cut, they'll end up on a rival team. But, you know, then we've got the draft where there's rumored five quarterbacks going in the top 12.
Okay.
You know, Chicago is supposedly going to take the number one pick and draft a quarterback, Caleb Williams from USC.
Okay.
Who grew up in Washington. So watch that if Washington moves up to trade for him. So Chicago gets some picks back. And then you've got the quarterback for the Heisman Trophy winner from LSU. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Drake May out of North Carolina going 1-2-3. Mm-hmm. They say the NCAA winning quarterback, J.J. McCarthy from Michigan, could go anywhere from 6 to the New York Giants. Which would be ironic. You pay Daniel Jones $160 million, and then the next year you draft a quarterback with the 6th pick, or Minnesota or Denver. And then I heard today that if Denver does not get McCartney, they were going to go for Bo Nix. So we're going to see. And if you look at the draft of 2022, 2 years ago, Trevor Lawrence drafted number one. He's had an okay career, has made the playoffs twice, but is injury prone. Then you go to Zach Wilson. Don't laugh, New York. But Zach Wilson, they basically told him, you can find your own deal someplace else with the Jets.
All right.
Trey Lance has been traded and actually lost his spot out to Mr. Irrelevant, Brock Purdy. Justin Fields has been traded. And Mac Jones has been traded. So 5 of the 6 quarterbacks drafted in the 2022 draft are no longer with the teams that drafted them.
All right.
And I think a lot of problem, and I'm going to wrap it up, is that you draft a lot of these quarterbacks high and expect them to play right away, and they get burned, and they can't handle it.
Yeah. We're going to keep an eye on the schedule. Take a break. And then we come back. March Madness, break down this one right. Men and the women, and then the men. Here we go. All right. Welcome back. Dr. Cliff Burton Friends, featuring the absolute very best in all women's sports, HBCU athletics. We welcome to all our engaged listeners, as well as those in the chat room. And so here we go. March Madness, the Division I tournament bracket. And we're going to break down each one. We'll look for some key games of interest, upsets. And let's start with the women. So overall, Steve and team in the East, let's get what we call opening one bracket, the number one team. The women of South Carolina Gamecocks. They're undefeated, coached by Dawn Staley. Your opinion, team, will this team